welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, August 2nd, 2010. I'm Sam Minter. As usual, I have Yvonne Bo with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So once again, I think it's been a pretty slow week. I don't know. There's been some stuff, I guess, but, you know, I come to the...
There's a lot of yelling. I mean, I've heard a lot of yelling, but I don't know if I'm really, like,
who's
getting
yelling?
All too...
I haven't even paid attention to yelling.
Today I was at the gym, and I was, I don't know, last week I did get hurt pretty badly.
Yeah, well,
I was, you know, today is finally the first day I've been back to the gym after getting hurt, because finally I'm able to walk normally. And so I'm sitting there on my... Actually, they told me not to do any running exercises. Try to stay like on one of those recumbent bikes. Okay, do that for a little bit. And so I was there, and you know, they had one of the TVs they had in front of me had Fox News on, and they spent the first 10 minutes of the newscast, okay, basically talking about how a lot of people are angry that not all the troops arrived at the border that Obama promised today. Now,
okay.
Honestly, you know, because the reason, and there was a guy, you know, that was there that was in the Bush administration who worked in this before, who he simply explained, look, this is how military deployments work. You know, it's not like we just, you know, take 1,000 people and just air. It's not like D-Day, you know. You know, we said that the deployment started then, but we're selecting the troops, we're training them what they're going to do, they're going to tell them where to deploy, and it's going to just be staggered. It's just starting today, and then it's going to be staggered. It's not like, you know, we're going to just airdrop them today, you know, like,
right.
You know, they're there. Well, a lot of people apparently are very angry about it, and Fox dedicated 10 minutes, the first 10 minutes of their newscast to this, and I was just like, fuck, this must be a really slow news week. I'm like, my God. I'm like, Jesus, 10 minutes on this shit? I mean, we ain't got anything else to talk about? I mean, really? I don't know.
Honestly, I hadn't even heard of that thing. And these days, you know, I'm not watching CNN. I'm not watching Fox. I occasionally listen to the BBC or NPR. You know, I've got a bunch of news feeds I follow, but like, most of them are like, you know, opinion feeds or tech feeds of various sorts. So, just playing what happened this last week, unless there's something big going on, half the time I don't know. Maybe that's a deficiency that I should work on. I don't know. But, you know, I've got a limited amount of time.
But it's not such a bad thing. I mean, actually, you know, and this wasn't one of the subjects that we talked about, but this week on NPR, somebody talked about the fact that the problem that we've got in news right now is that a lot of people wind up getting their news, he was comparing to like, you know, 30, 40 years ago, everybody got the news from CBS, ABC, NBC. And for the most part, you know, those guys had a certain ethics about, the thing he said is that you watched all three newscasts and they almost pretty much said the same thing.
Right.
They said about very close to the same facts. Now, it doesn't matter that other people had very different opinions about it, but they pretty much brought out the same facts, maybe covered in some way. Maybe one guy had a scoop and the other guy had a scoop, but they pretty much talked about the same stuff. You could argue that they were selective in their news coverage and that caused bias or whatever. But at the end of the day, when people had a discussion on the street, they may have different points of view on A or B, but it was based on the same set of facts. Okay?
Right.
Now, it's not like that anymore. You know, it's like you can go and like sit in most of the news networks right now are not unbiased, or at least not that they weren't biased back then, but they are far more biased now. Okay. And if you watch one of them, I mean, you know, for most people who are very easy to brainwash, you know, because most people do not question what comes on the fucking TV, as we have noticed, like the White House definitely didn't, a bunch of morons. They go, and I'm like, you know, they're just taking this like gospel. And so it's like, you know, they watch this and they're like, yeah, the troops, they're not there. Oh my God, the fucking country's being invaded. You know, like, my God, yeah, okay, great. So 10 minutes on that. So I don't know. So the fact that you don't watch that, I mean, you're getting facts from a whole bunch of different places, but
I mean,
I don't know if any of this stuff is really useful to watch, to be honest.
And I'd say not that any of those sources would give it to
me. And for both sides.
No, I know.
By the way, I'm not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that any of those sources would necessarily get it to me, but I'm wondering whether, you know, there's something that I should add to my repertoire of things I read on a regular basis that would just give me a basic overview of important things that happened in the world recently, you know, and not with like, you know, one that would actually pay attention to the things going off in the parts of the world that generally aren't covered, and would also pay attention to things here, of course, but would like, you know, at the same time, completely ignore the crap that doesn't matter that a lot of time gets spent on. I don't know.
I know what you mean.
And at the same time, anytime I say something like someplace I should add to what I do, I'm like, you got to be kidding. I got too much already. I can't keep up with the shit. I have to cut things out, not add them. But maybe there's something I'm missing that's a better quality that I should pay attention to, you know? I mean, maybe it's as simple as going back to something, you know, old fashioned and, you know, checking out the New York Times headlines every day, or CBS, yeah.
What? There you go. Well, I don't know. I mean, I do read like the New York Times on the day on a daily basis. I probably get most of my news. I mean, I listen to NPR a lot still.
Yeah.
I don't know if you do, but
I listen to very limited amounts live. I have a bunch of NPR podcasts I listen to, not necessarily in a timely fashion. More recently, I've been occasionally listening to KCRW news stuff, which is an NPR station out of LA, I think. And they have like BBC at night and regular NPR stuff in the daytime, and I listen to that sometimes on my iPhone. You know, so I don't know.
Anyway, all right. So, okay. So, you know, I don't know. I think that given the information noise that's out there, it's probably not a bad thing to limit your sources because when they led for 10 minutes on that shit, really, there wasn't that many news. Okay. I think we got most of them down.
So anyway, the point was, Yvonne and I, like, when we were trying to come up with the topics for the show this week, and for that matter, honestly, for the last few weeks, it's like, really, is there anything going on? It's like the summer doldrums. You know, there's, like, nothing exciting happening. This is the time of year that you usually start having the news people talk about shark attacks or something, you know? And there's nothing, nothing going on that's, like, all
that. I mean, it's, and what we're talking about is stuff that's new. I mean, the war in Afghanistan, yes, we know that. It's happening every day.
And it's important, but yes.
And it's important, yes, but what can we really add of value to that discussion?
I mean, and we probably will talk a little bit later about the WikiLeaks stuff, and there's maybe a couple additional things to say there. But, you know, you know, on the one hand here, I'm like, you know, it's boring. Let's be there. Let's have some news happen. But unfortunately, usually news happening when there's real news usually involves like pain and suffering and somebody getting screwed and
things we're not advocating
people, you
any
know?
Of that. No.
You
no.
know,
this could be like news could be that Microsoft launches a new phone, maybe a good one.
Maybe.
That would be really news.
But
you know, if it ever happened.
After you and I spend like 10 minutes bitching about how there's not enough news, sometime in the next few days, there's going to be like some major natural disaster or terrorist attack or something, and thousands of people died. There was a hurricane and flooding somewhere.
Well, no, there was a flood in China. About 1,200 people have been killed, okay? But let's talk about what can we say about this. There's flooding, landslides. We don't feel good about it, but I don't know what the hell to say about this other than the fact that it happened.
To me, like I was vaguely aware that some kind of natural disaster happened somewhere, but I knew nothing more than that.
And they struck down the law, you know, for the most part, of the provisions of the immigration law in Arizona, but I actually fully expected that So, but I fully expected that. So
There was the Library of Congress put out a ruling on the DMCA stuff, providing a bunch of exemptions for people to, you know, make personal copies at home and do other stuff for various things, and that's cool, I guess. Anyway.
Yeah, but anyway, all right.
Let's take a break, and we'll be back. Yvonne and I actually, despite our bitching for the last few minutes, actually did come up with one or two topics to talk about, so we will be back in a minute. Enjoy your break. Okay, we're back. Yvonne, you mentioned right before the show to me that this last week you went to the you went to the Apple Store for something, and what happened?
Well, this is what happened. I got this iPhone 3GS in December, and shortly thereafter, someday the battery started draining very quickly. Now, I called Apple support over the phone. And they told me, okay, let's try a couple of things. Well, one of them is just, look, restore the phone and see if that helps with your battery drain. And lo and behold, it actually did. I restored the software, and the battery was back to working normally, okay?
Okay.
A couple of weeks when I went to San Francisco, which must have been a little bit over a week and a half ago, I got to San Francisco. All of a sudden, my battery started draining again, like super fast. So I made an appointment to go to the Apple Store, okay, to take the phone. And I did it, you know, when I got back, I went today. And so I do have the iPhone software 4.0.1, I guess, is right now. And so the guy takes the phone, and he mentions to me something that just left me, you know, flabbergasted, because he tells me, well, it may be that you're having too many applications running. And I'm like, what the hell do you mean? Well, if you open up here the menu and you've got all these applications running, that could be draining your battery. And I'm like, wait a second.
What? Okay. Keep talking.
I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, no. He's saying that he's had a case of some customers which have had almost like 80 apps open.
You mean open in the multitasking in iOS 4?
That's right. And actually, I don't know if I didn't realize that that's what this fucking thing meant, okay? When you double tap on iOS – on the OS 4, if you are, say, inside an application, okay, you're doing whatever, say, mail, okay, you double tap on the home menu, this list of applications comes down at the bottom, okay? And that's actually a fucking task manager. Okay.
And
that means that all those applications are actually open.
Well, not quite. I mean, what it's doing.
Well, that's what the fucking guy at the Apple Store said.
He knows shit. Look. Here's the primary difference. Like in other operating systems that do multitasking, they're actually multitasking. All of those apps are active, doing stuff. What the iOS 4 is really doing is something much more like fast user switching on the Mac. Basically, with the exception of a handful of okayed things to do in the background, like streaming music,
Right.
They basically save their state to memory so that when you go back
okay,
to them...
Okay, they're just saving state. Okay. Well, I thought the guy was bullshitting me, okay? Because like, Jesus, this can't be right. And I'm like, because I'm like, fuck, this is the damn reason I don't have a fucking Windows mobile piece of shit phone. I'm like, I got to start quitting apps right now because they're hogging fucking power. I'm like, fucking bullshit.
Yeah, no.
Let me
just state this one additional thing. There are a few things that apps are allowed to actually do in the background. And there's a limited number, and when Steve Jobs announced this, he listed what they were. You know, there's streaming music, there's finishing a download, there's another couple of things where it says, like, you know, please give me permission to finish this one task, to sort of complete a task. There's a very limited things. They don't continue operating in toto as if they were operating normally. There's a specific set of things that when you leave them, they're allowed to continue. And so if you have enough of them doing that, those kinds of things at the same time, maybe there is some resource drain, but it's really much more limited. They're saving their state to memory so that when you go back to them, you're right back where you left off instead of having to restart the app. That's the main thing.
That's what I thought because, I mean, I used my brother's iPhone 4, and besides, it didn't happen since the beginning, you know? So you know, his iPhone 4, definitely a battery wasn't draining too quickly. And, I mean, we did all sorts of shit on it. So, I don't know. But anyway, well, that's the fucking bullshit story that he told me at the store today. Now, the one thing is that they gave me a – look, they still traded my old 3GS for – they gave me another 3GS.
Yeah.
But, you know, the problem is that – I think it's a problem with – well, I'm pretty convinced that the problem with my old phone was the battery. There was some problem with the battery since new. Now, the new one I got today, I haven't yet fully charged it, so I don't know if the battery – when I got the other one and I reloaded the software, I did everything. The fucking phone started overheating just like the other one I had, and the battery was draining real fast.
You know, I'm like, fuck. I think this all just means you need an iPhone 4.
Well, the problem is if they had a white one, I would, but – they don't have any.
You know, I have a white 3G, and I really liked the white one, and I liked it better than the black one. But with how the 4s look, yeah. I like the black better. I mean, if I was getting a 4 today, I'd get a black, even though I had a white 3G.
I don't know. They didn't have any in stock, and they didn't have any iPads in stock. I actually thought that if they did have one, I would surprise my wife, who's been asking for an iPad, to go and, like, buy one, which is probably a good thing that I didn't, because I looked at how much money I've already spent this month. It's probably a good idea not to spend any more.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I almost, like, if they probably had one there, I would have just fucking bought one, but they have none of it in stock. What I wound up buying is, like, okay, so they gave me the phone, and hopefully my battery life will be back to normal, because right now it is charging, and it's not. I drained the battery all the way on this new one, all the way down to zero. I ran video on it until it just died, okay? And I'm charging it back up, and right now it's charging back up, but it's not feeling warm anymore because it was originally. So I don't know. We'll see if that takes care of that. But the other thing that I did is I got I had a backup hard drive before, and my backup hard drive died. Okay, all right. It was only a year old, and the hard drive went kaput. Okay, yeah. So I purchased another one that said it was time capsule. What the fuck is the backup software?
Time machine. Yes,
compatible, and the drive said that on there, because the original drive I bought, I couldn't connect to my Airport Express Extreme and back up through there, okay? But this one I did, and it does. So I am running the first backup right now because the other backup drive died. Now, I am having to run it. I must admit, I did plug in my laptop with an Ethernet cable to the network, because over the wireless, I think it would have taken, like, the first backup would have taken way too damn long. It took 4 hours for a gigabyte and a half. So
yep.
For 180 gigs, you do the math. It would have been, 4 gigs? Wait, 6 times 4.
A long time.
10 gigs a day, 18 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been a little bit too long. So anyway, so all right, so that was my thing today at the Apple Store. That's what they told me. I was like, this is just bizarre.
I think you have a case of an Apple person making shit up. You know, because look, I'll also mention this before we move on to another topic. The quality of the Apple geniuses has gone down from like when the Apple Store first opened. Well, it has to.
They've hired so many extra of them for crying out loud.
I mean, when it first opened, you basically had the biggest Apple geeks in town. Were the geniuses, and that's not true anymore. Now they're hiring, you know, regular old people and training them and going through like
they're putting them through a good training program. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the guys look. I've seen them handle the devices and do stuff.
But let me give you. Let me give you an example because we've had an Apple Store thing going on lately too. So Brandy's MacBook Pro, which is like 2 years old or something at this point. Started having a video glitch where, like, every once in a while, the screen would, like, have some sort of... It would get weird, scrambled, and then the computer would lock up and be frozen, and she'd have to reboot. Okay? And so, you know, this happened once, and you're like, ah, whatever. But once it happened several times, we're like, okay, something funky's going on here. So let's take it to the Apple Store to get it checked out. So we took it to the Apple Store, and they ran video diagnostics and stuff on it. And said, and like within like 30 seconds, we're like, "Oh, your video card's fried, but you're still under Apple Care, so we'll give you a new one for free, no problem." So yeah, they replaced the video card, and then 2 days later, the same thing happened again. The same problem.
Okay.
So she took it back in to the Apple Store again, and this time it passed the video card test, and it's like it's fine. And we're like, okay. So I guess the fact that the video card failed last time was actually completely unrelated to whatever problem this is. Like, yeah, so maybe it's something else. And so they're like, their next piece of advice was reinstall Snow Leopard. Okay, now look, this is the advice of someone who actually has absolutely no idea what the fuck is going on or why it's happening and is just saying, well, okay, maybe reinstall the OS and maybe it'll help. And okay, I'll give it to you that 99% of the problem, when things have weird problems, 90% of the time they can be solved by rebooting the damn computer. And probably 90% of the remaining time, it can be solved by reinstalling the OS. But come on. Like, there's no more detailed troubleshooting. There's no trying to really figure out what's going on. So they basically told her, you should and also, by the way, when it came back with the new video card, the computer thought it was a brand new computer. All the preferences and crap, like, you know, like authorizing songs on iTunes and stuff like that, thought it was a brand new computer. Time machine thought it was a brand new computer and wanted to restart it. And it's like, it's not like we replaced the hard drive. We replaced the damn video card, but I guess it identifies it is a new computer at that point. But anyway, pain in the ass. So they're telling her, go. You know, they offered to reinstall Snow Leopard for her. And she's like, no, thanks. You know, but they basically told her, go home, reinstall Snow Leopard. And then if you're still having the problem after that, bring it back. And then maybe we'll replace something else. You know, and I'm like, come on. You know, and I understand the level of support,
so that was what they suggested. Did this solve the – I mean, did you guys do it?
We have not done that yet. And the reason is because – there are two reasons. First of all, doing that you know, reinstalling your damn – like if we reinstall Snow Leopard and then reapply all the patches and updates and all – we're talking about an afternoon or more – of time dealing with this shit.
True.
And we just haven't had time to do that yet. Second, it seems like a significant amount of time it's crashing when the user is doing the same kind of thing. And basically, they assure me it's happened in a few other occasions too, but every time I have seen it has happened when we were quitting the Slingbox application. So I'm like, let's try reinstalling Slingbox first. So anyway, we're gonna try some stuff, and I'm gonna try some actual troubleshooting, like actually changing little things here and there and seeing if it makes a difference. You know,
wow, troubleshooting.
And look, I understand the, you know, level one support, level two support, level three support. You can't have everybody who comes into a problem. Into a store with a problem, get detailed troubleshooting. to figure out the exact problem and the exact set of things that are going wrong to fix that thing. You have to start people on reboot your computer, you know, things like that, and reinstall your operating system. It's just not, you know, monetarily efficient to do otherwise. But it still frustrates me whenever I go into one of those type of scenarios, and you know, even if you tell them, you know, I've already tried this, this, and this, I've eliminated this possibility and that, they go through the whole thing again, and they have to, and I understand that, but it's still frustrating as hell for anybody who actually has a clue to interface with that kind of support, you know? Anyway.
I hear you. Anyway, all right. So, okay.
Okay,
so
time for another break.
They're not as good a geniuses as they used to be.
And you know. Anyway, let's take another break. It's time for your poem of the week, and we'll be back right after this message, or poem, or whatever it is,
or something.
Something.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner poem of the week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
The Lost Love Letters of Cumberland by Jerry LaFemina. I know she wrote them, Shonda, but don't know, can't know really, whether he read them. If not, did she just misplace these folded sheets of loose leaf, her chubby cursive declarations of love, or did she leave them deliberately there, like square-winged moths on a bench downtown, slightly ruffling in the slight wind? There are, of course, some answers I can never know, though I try to picture Andrew's pimpled, bemused face and close-cropped hair, not knowing if this urge when he's around her to touch her is love or something baser. He's 16, after all, so why wouldn't he throw away those notes that proclaim, I want to be with you for the rest of my life until I die, I want to have your kids. I can't say, but there they were, some with a lingering patina of perfume, and I gathered them up gently, fingering each sheet, so I could fold them up perfectly again as if they had never been read, even though I had no intention of returning them. Hadn't I thrown away all the romantic notes of my youth? The ones I wrote and never sent, the one I didn't receive? A girl I loved then committed suicide and another was born again, and Shonda looks downward all the time and complains bitterly to her friends. I've seen her, or someone just like her, at the shopping mall and coffee shop. It always comes back to Andrew, who does what he always does, and who seems confused by her crying, and who says to her, I love you, and hopes he means it, and who is like any of us in the face of that overwhelming.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
And with Yvonne's whistling, we are back. So
what are we talking about now?
Oh, so I read a headline, and Yvonne actually read the article, about an increasing trend of people who are married couples who decide they no longer get along and don't, however, feel it is worth their time or effort to actually get divorced, and so just stay married.
And there's a lot of reasons why it's happening.
I should say stay married legally. They may well move apart. They may well see each other not at all or once or twice a year. And basically not have any sort of relationship anymore, but keep all the legal stuff on the books. And I'll preface this with, although it's a little bit different scenario than what's in the article, I, of course, have some experience with this because Brandy, who I have my child with and I've been with for the last 5-6 years, is actually, in fact, still married to her husband, who she married some 12-13 years ago and hasn't seen in probably 12 years. And the reason was they, you know, back then they got separated. They did some sort of separation agreement. They went their separate ways. He disappeared off the face of the earth, and for like a decade, she didn't hear from him at all. And there was just sort of no compelling reason for them to finish that paperwork up, and so it never happened. We're Yeah, for anyone who's curious, we're in the process of getting that stuff taken care of now. It's a long, complicated process that's made more long and more complicated by an incompetent lawyer. But anyway, so that situation has existed here, but that the sort of situation that people are talking about now is actually not quite that, although the sort of why bother is part of it. But it's also things like, well, you know, I'm fine keeping her on my health insurance. You know, I'm fine continuing to file jointly. It gives benefits.
Right.
Yeah, so tell us more, Yvonne, since you actually read this thing.
Well, that's the main thing. A lot of people, like, for example, I mean, are doing, you know, one of the problems, for example, they were talking about is the current bad real estate market.
Yeah.
So you get a couple that's married. They can't sell the damn house. And so they wind up living together, like, for example, maybe in separate parts of a house, like, for extended periods of time because they can't do that. In other cases, they were talking about just couples that, you know, one of them decided, fuck it, I'm out of, I don't want to live with you anymore. They moved across the country 20, 30 years ago and just never decided to get divorced.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, yeah. I mean, that was it. So they legally married and they filed taxes together. And a whole bunch of the other cases, it was just one of the reasons, you know, some people talking about healthcare reform is people who just, if they got divorced, they couldn't have health benefits. Maybe they were using a spouse's health benefits. He didn't. And they were like, well, shit, then I got to keep with the health benefits. I mean, the last couple of years when I was at HP, HP actually removed the health benefit for domestic partners.
Hmm. Okay.
However, you know, they did that about 3 years ago or so. However, this is in a funny twist, which we said they kept the one for gay domestic partnerships.
Right.
But not for heterosexual ones.
Well, I've seen a couple companies make that kind of change where they basically said, look, you know, if you're a heterosexual, you have the option of getting married if you want benefits. Just go do it. You know?
Right. But if you're apparently if you're gay, you don't have the option to get married, so therefore you can
in most states,
which
yeah.
To me just but it was just I was like, okay, that's really bizarre. But yeah, but so a lot of people, you know, health benefits, other reasons, maybe they've got kids, maybe they just don't want to go through the frickin' hassle of it. You know,
bottom line is even in an uncontested divorce, there is hassle, there is cost, there, you know, are fees to file things. And like, if the two of you are sort of willing to sort of work out an arrangement on your own, then why bother?
Yeah.
You know, and
so yeah.
So I find it interesting, and like I said, I think it's fundamentally like whenever the marriage issue comes up, and whether this is gay marriage or any other, you know, form, you know, and I've said this before here, my opinion is it would be much better if government just got the fuck out of it entirely. Like, you know, don't even like acknowledge the parent-child relationship, but there's no reason. Treat everybody as individuals, and if they want to make some sort of arrangement in and of amongst themselves, let that be their business. Why does government have to care at all? You know, from the point of view of like and hospitals who are making the policies about like visitation and stuff like that, come on, it doesn't have to be tied to that. That's just a matter of, you know, of stupid policy. I mean, all of these things should be when it comes to what is a family and who is together and who is not together and blah, blah, blah. You know, it should be nobody's business but the people involved. And where you do have interactions with things that are legality type things, you know, you can deal with them like you deal with any other contract. You know, if people want to pool their financial resources, that's a contract. You know, if people want to agree to, you know, have a power of attorney over each other, that's a contract. You know, why do you have to have all this other crap?
And I agree. I mean, a lot of the states, like, for example, that have community property, for example, that creates a mess. Because, for example, you know, say, I mean, shit, if your husband or your spouse takes a whole bunch of debt unbeknownst to you in a community property state, you're screwed. You're liable for that debt, too.
Yeah.
And you maybe didn't even know about it. Okay.
Yeah.
And but, you know, and it's like, I mean, those are things that, for example, I mean, that's what I understand about those rules. It's like, I mean, spouses sometimes could go off and do all sorts of crazy shit unbeknownst to you, and you wind up on the hook for it. And that just doesn't make sense to me. I agree. So,
I mean,
anyway,
Yeah, and if you and your spouse want to enter an agreement where they can do stuff behind your back and you're liable for it, then that's between you two. But, you know, I guess what I have a problem with is the idea of a standard marriage contract that defines what a marriage is from the point of view of the state that's the same for everybody. You know, it's like, yeah, okay, fine, if you want to have one of those, a sort of standard contract, you know, go buy one at Walmart or whatever and you sign it. You know, but like for the most part, you should be able to come up with any freaking agreement you want between consenting adults on how they want to govern those kinds of things. And, you know, aside from sort of the kind of things that generally apply to enforce contract law, government shouldn't be involved at all. And things like tax law and stuff should be neutral to that. They should deal with individuals and only individuals. So anyway, my rant is over.
Anyway. All right. Rant is over. Okay. So I guess we're taking a break then.
Yeah, let's take a break, and we'll be back in a second. I guess two things left probably to talk about, and we'll try to cram them into one segment. Deflation and the update on the WikiLeaks stuff, since we kind of punted on it last week.
What do you get when two housewives produce an online poetry journal? Poems celebrating dishwater, breastfeeding, and lunar phases? Quick trips to the pool boy? Maybe. But they like to believe they offer much more than that. There's no telling what you'll get at the No-Tell Motel. But I hear sneaking out and keeping everything hush-hush is kind of sexy, and they're hot for discretion. Having it all keeps our two housewives awfully busy, so they like to stop and smell the posies, spend quality time with their poets, which is why their rendezvous lasts a full 7 days, a new poem each weekday. Each year they slip their room key to 52 poets and indulge in 260 poems. Their spouse's misfortunes are your gains. Meet with them daily at notellmotel.org. They'll be in room 5C, sipping the latest cocktail recommended in Martha Stewart's Living, Scribbling Marginalia.
Okay, we're back. Let's talk about deflation first. It's something that every once in a while we've brought up on this show. And generally, you know, we've said, yeah, it might be something to worry about, but now apparently there's some other people agreeing. So tell us more, Yvonne.
The one of the Fed governors this week went and mentioned that one of the discussions that the Fed was having was that the problems that we're having right now that we should be concerned with is not so much an inflation scenario, but it's a deflation scenario. The reason for it is low employment. The fact that people's debt levels are high. The fact that even though the Fed has been trying to put the pedal to the metal on like making credit easily available, it's still not easily available. A lot of people are constrained right now in mortgages in their houses that they continue to pay maybe the values are okay, but maybe they can make the payments, but they can't refinance because banks have gotten so tough that even though they may have good credit or whatever, most banks are refusing to refinance a lot of mortgages. So people can't take advantage of a lot of the lower rates. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people that are boxed into certain situations right now that it's just decelerating the economy in a way that even though interest rates are historic lows, most people can't take advantage of it. So that just makes it like, you know, you might as well have interest rates really high. It's not making really that much of a difference on the economy. And that's why they're concerned about a deflationary scenario, because if people can't acquire assets, if there's no liquidity, no matter what you're doing, then they're concerned about deflation. Another reason deflation is because I think that they're concerned that we still haven't been able to wash all the bad debts through the system as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if we've got, you know, a lot of commercial mortgages are being re-extended, refied, a lot of the banks are having to take over the properties and whatever, and that could also continue to just, you know, cause a deflationary scenario. So So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of concern regarding that, whether, you know, we could have a repeat of what happened to Japan in the 90s in the U.S. So deflation sucks, okay? Most people have debt.
Let's talk about this for a second, because it's not...
Let's explain the problem.
Because it's not necessarily... It's not necessarily obvious, because on first blush, you would say, hey, deflation, that means prices going down. That means things are cheaper. That means I can buy more stuff. That sounds great, but why isn't it?
But no, it means that your assets... the value of any assets that you own is going down and your debts are remaining the same. Therefore, it makes it for you far more difficult to pay any debt that you have. A deflationary scenario on anybody that has any debt is a disaster. Disaster. And since Americans have a lot of debt, actually, I looked at a chart recently that we are not the most indebted country by far. I mean, it's like even when you add consumer debt and government debt, we're not even close. On a per capita basis, it's just bad. I mean, you still owe the same amount of money even though the value of your fucking asset's going down. You want to fucking kill yourself for crying out loud. Let's just say you bought a home. You put 30% down. Okay? Give you a scenario.
So let me add one thing. This also assumes that you have – like a large portion of the population doesn't have like static assets that make a significant portion of their net worth. The only thing that matters is their salary, but often in deflationary scenarios, salaries drop as well.
That's exactly right. So your earnings power, so your earnings go down. The value of your home goes down. Say if you've got your money invested into stocks, anything, that goes down. It's a fucking clusterfuck. I mean, it is not a good scenario. If you're asking me right now, in our situation, what's the best of both worlds, 10% inflation or 3% deflation? Fuck, man, give me inflation any day of the week. I'll take fucking inflation right now.
Because inflation helps your debts go away, essentially.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Yes.
So,
in a world where most people have lots of debt, inflation can actually be a good thing, within reason, of course.
If
you're sitting happily with zero debt and a nice income coming in, and all you have to do with it is, you're not paying off a house, you're not paying off a car, you're not paying off credit cards, you're just buying shit, then inflation is bad and deflation would be good for you personally for the short term. But most people aren't in that scenario.
Yes, most people are not, but, you know. So, I mean, I'm hoping that this doesn't happen. I think that the Fed's still got a lot of tools. Somebody suggested this week a very easy thing to do right now, just right off the bat. You take anybody who's got an FHA, Fannie, or Freddie Mac mortgage that has been current under payments but cannot refinance for X, Y, Z reason. You know what? You send them a simple form. You say, here you go. We're going to lower your interest rate. You can make your payments. We'll adjust it to the current rate. Do a simple form. Do that change. Boom. They get the benefit of a refi without having to do anything else. And that would help a significant portion of people out there who right now can't refinance but would like to take – I mean, who are being responsible under debts, but that they can't refinance because of the current banking scenario. So, I mean, I don't know. That was a proposal that's out there. Who knows if they're going to do it? But
I still like the idea of dropping hundreds out of helicopters.
Well, that was – that's always been that's a plus. I mean, I'd stand out there and try to grab a few. I mean, I'd tell you what. I would like – I don't know. I've seen, of course they're not in circulation, but, those $1,000 bills and those $100,000 bills, I mean, if they were dropping thousands, I mean, I'd be happier with that.
I've seen a couple arguments.
You've seen what?
I've just seen a couple arguments lately about the context was actually aid programs to poorer countries or even to poorer individuals within the states saying, you know, for generations, it's been thought that the, you know, you needed to have sort of complicated programs that provide the benefit to people, or, you know, help get them trained or do this or do that, or, you know, but basically people making the argument that, you know, we've found out over the years that those programs get bloated and horribly inefficient and blah, blah, blah. And we're trying to protect against, you know, inefficiencies and people not doing smart things with the benefits they get, etc. But all that stuff's happening anyway, you know.
Yes.
And basically making the argument, just give them cash. Just give them cash.
Fucking throw cash. Fuck it, man.
And
do it simple.
And yes, they'll waste some of it, but the argument is being made, and the case is getting stronger for you might end up with a more a better actual measurable result based on the metrics people are caring about just handing out cash than you are getting with these much more complex programs that aim to help people in very specific ways today.
Okay.
And I think the same thing might apply for all of these other kinds of things too. You know, you want to stimulate, you know, whatever, blah blah blah. You just give out cash.
Well, I look, but you see, but I don't know. Bushy tried that. You
yeah,
know,
but in a very
Kramer,
limited way.
Kramer, Kramer called it the iPod recovery plan. I mean, we got checks for like, well, I didn't get any. But, you know, I saw, you know, I didn't get any.
I saw a
friend of ours who got a check for 25 cents. I saw, you know, yes, a good mutual friend of ours got a check for 25 cents, which I took a picture of, but I decided not to post on the internet because I didn't have good – I wasn't comfortable that I could redact his Social Security and whatever in a way that couldn't be couldn't be discovered. But, yes, you know, but what the hell – $300. He called it the iPod recovery plan. So what, people went out and bought iPods and iPhones?
No, come on. If you're going to do
it – I mean, seriously, what the fuck?
If you're going to do it right. Give everyone 10 grand.
Now, 10 grand, now we're talking. Now we're talking.
You know, I
–
You know, I could use
now
10
we're talking.
Grand. I could easily figure out how I would use 10
grand. Oh, my God. I got a fucking check from the government for 10 grand. I'd be fucking jumping up and down like a fucking school kid.
Would you happily stimulate the economy with that 10 grand?
Oh, yes. Actually, you know what? No. I would probably use it to pay down something, actually.
Well, and that's
probably
a,
maybe people –
That's actually one of the arguments that people have used against those things is they're like, you know, people would just pay down their debt, and we don't actually want them to pay down their debt.
No, they don't. They don't. They want us to spend the money.
Yes. So, yeah, and yes, if I got that, a good portion of it would also probably going to paying down debt. Anyway, we're pretty much out of time, but I wanted to do WikiLeaks real quick. So we didn't talk about it last time because it had just happened. Now with a week under our belt, basically a bunch of documents that I don't think in the end really revealed all that much new in terms of the overall picture. We'll talk about specifics in a second. But basically, these are just more things saying, you know, hey, the situation in Afghanistan is kind of fucked up. I think there are some interesting things here, like WikiLeaks has gotten a lot of flack for not redacting the names of, say, Afghan informants. And so those people right now are screwed, you know. Or in some cases, not fully redacting enough information. Like, you don't give the guy's name, but you give the name of his village and the location of his house. And so, well, okay.
Yeah, I know.
You know? And so I would actually agree with all the criticism that people have given for WikiLeaks about, you know, if you're going to do this, it'd be nice to at least be a little bit careful in terms of let's get the point of these documents across without necessarily screwing, you know, individuals here who, I don't know. I mean, maybe some of the individuals deserve to get screwed. I don't know. But I think it was done a little haphazardly. But I think the idea that some of this stuff, I feel like the whole infrastructure around what's secret and what's not tilts a little too protectively towards keeping things secret. And I sort of feel like, you know, there should be an automatic time limit on anything that's classified. You know, and maybe for a few things that are really, really highly sensitive, it's 100 fucking years. But, like, you know, anything that you... there should always be an expiration date after which it's completely public. And generally not anywhere close to 100 years because the sensitivity of something has diminished. But even aside from that, you know, I said last time, I think, or maybe it was the time before, you know, having outlets for whistleblowers is important. And whistleblowers are important. And, you know, for the most part, these people, if you're going to do something like that, you know, you got to sort of know the consequences and be okay with it and think that what you're providing is important enough to be worth it. You know, so the poor schlub who released these documents to WikiLeaks, you know, he's being court-martialed now, you know, and he's probably going to get the book thrown at him. And so hopefully, you know, he made the calculation and thought that this information was so incredibly important that it needed to be out there and it was worth spending the rest of his life in jail for, or whatever is going to happen to him.
I don't know if he's going to spend the rest of his life in jail, but certainly he will get some jail time for this.
I don't know how severe the punishment will be, but... I mean,
but
leaking classified documents is not a trivial offense. Let's just put it that way.
Definitely not a trivial offense. You know, you do something like this, you gotta definitely, you know, think of what? How do you say? I mean, you know, you're putting yourself out there in order to hopefully do a greater good. I mean, and many times, I mean, some of these secrets, there's just too many secrets being held. I do agree a little bit that they probably, maybe what WikiLeaks could have done was, like, slowly release these documents over a period of time and, you know, make sure that everything was released instead of, like, pumping them out there all at once because there's just too many of them to make sure that when you released them, you were being as responsible with them as you could. I think maybe that was the mistake of trying to just, you know, do too much at once.
Well, and also from this the guy sitting in jail now, you know, looking at what's come out of this, the overall consensus is like, yeah, this gives us a lot of detail we didn't necessarily have before, but it doesn't change our picture. The things that are fucked up, we knew were fucked up, you know, and was public information.
I think there's some that we didn't. I mean, maybe we knew it, but not the extent of it. Especially yeah, maybe, what they talked maybe about the Pakistan intelligence service definitely given far more support to the Taliban than I would have ever suspected.
Well, yeah, but you know, I read articles about them doing that years ago. I mean,
I know, it's true.
In fact, more recent articles from just this year about how in many ways Pakistan has done an about face and is cracking down on some of that stuff and blah blah blah, you know, in the time period after
and how
these
they
documents.
Had right. true, very true. So I don't know. I mean, I think that was one awful risk. I don't know if we really gained that much additional information.
Yeah, and the other interesting WikiLeaks thing related to this is, of course, the government is trying to figure out whether or not they're going to go after the founder of WikiLeaks, as well as the guy who actually leaked the documents here. I guess, what's his name? Julian Assange or something like that? I don't know. Anyway, and he's out of the country in an undisclosed location because he may be highly wanted at some point in the near future. He's certainly wanted to be talked to at this point. And recently, like in the last couple of days, WikiLeaks added one more document to that document dump that they did that was titled simply Insurance, and it is a massive multi-gigabyte file that is heavily encrypted. I'm quoting heavily encrypted is like the quote that's been used to describe it. I don't know what the actual encryption is, but anyway, it's an encrypted file that's been posted titled Insurance. And with no explanation to it whatsoever, people are speculating it's something along the lines of, you know, if that WikiLeaks founder gets arrested or whatever, the encryption keys will be released and this document has something incriminating about something or other in it. But no one actually knows. It's all just idle speculation. It's interesting speculation. Yeah, so yeah. We'll see.
Well, we'll see. We'll find out. All right. So we done the list.
Yep, we are.
We're done.
Yeah,
we're out.
I was going to mention the oil spill looks like it's getting cleaner faster than people thought it would, at least on the surface. You know, that we're still not dumping more into the ocean, and the surface is clearing up a lot faster than people thought it would. A big question remains about how much oil remains underneath the surface and what the effects of that might be. This was a few people when this first started actually posted, and the one I have in mind is Alan Sullivan from a blog called Fresh Bilge. He actually just passed away a couple weeks ago. But back then when the oil spill started, he made a post that said, look, the Gulf of Mexico is not like the Gulf of Alaska or where the Exxon Valdez was, where it's cold, there's not much going on, and the oil stayed around for years and years and years. The Gulf Coast has... It's warm. It's got a lot of solar energy pouring into it. The whole area gets churned up on a regular basis by tropical storms and hurricanes and things like that. This stuff is going to clear out a lot faster than the people are scaring you about right now. So and so far, it looks like he may be right. We'll see. Like I said, there's still a lot of questions about what's going on underneath the surface. But it does look like things are cleaning up a little faster than people thought they would, which I guess is a good thing. So,
well, yeah, it's a good thing. Woohoo! I'm happy about that.
Okay, and that's it. Another Curmudgeon's Corner is done. Thank you for joining us. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com if you have any questions, thoughts, comments, whatever. Otherwise, tell your friends to listen and tune in next week. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Yvonne.